Are you ready to be inspired by the brilliant minds shaping the future of science, technology, engineering, and mathematics? I am your host, Kelly Shungu, and this is the Women in STEM podcast, recognized for its outstanding content and commitment to promoting diversity in the STEM field. Each episode of our award-winning show, we sit down with extraordinary people who are breaking barriers and making waves in the STEM field. From groundbreaking researchers to innovative entrepreneurs, we are amplifying the voices of the unheard. Whether you're a student considering a STEM career, a professional looking to advance, or simply curious about the exciting developments in this field, this is the podcast for you. We'll be exploring diverse career paths, discussing challenges and triumphs, and showcasing the incredible impact of women in STEM. Now let's dive into today's inspiring conversation. Welcome to the Women in STEM podcast. Would you like to introduce yourself, please?
I am so happy and honored to be here, of course. My name is Carrie Peralta, and I am a career coach, but I was a former tech recruiter turned entrepreneur and career coach. Now I'm the founder and head coach of Peak State Coaching. Yeah, so a little bit about me. I have been in the technical recruiting space for about 20 years. It feels so weird to say that because it's gone by really quickly. Lots of ebbs and flows in tech. I started at Intel. It was my very first job out of college doing college recruiting. Made my way through Verizon, which is a big telecom company here in the U.S. And then eventually to my dream job at Google and then most recently at Netflix. And so I would say about 18 months ago, I went through like a mid-career life crisis. I got laid off in tech. Shocker. That happens to a lot of people. It was my second layoff ever in my career. And I really had to dig deep and think about what is it that I want to do next? What's my next career move? I did a lot of deep self-work, a lot of working on myself, lots of asking why, what's my reasons? What is it I'm really truly passionate about? And it came down to the same elements that I, you know, really was motivated and filled my cup so much in recruiting, which is the candidate piece, working with candidates and just matching people with jobs that they just really love. And they're not just jobs, but careers, right? So something that really impacts them more long term. And I just love that matching piece, pulling out the very best of themselves so they can show up fully at interviews and during compensation discussions. So that's when I said, it's so clear to me that I want to do this as a coach, cut out some of the corporate BS and not have to do it for someone else and really kind of live my own dream and my own purpose. So here I am today and I'm loving every moment of it. I'm just learning every day.
That's a great introduction. I was wondering if you could just go into a bit more depth around your background in technical recruiting and the strategies that you've been utilizing, as well as how you developed your passion for empowering individuals in their career.
Yeah, that's a great question. So let's see. So in technical recruiting, I kind of, you know, cut my teeth on hardware engineers. So I started in hardware engineering. So these are circuit designers. You know, I was working for a chip maker at the time and doing college recruiting. So these are like new grads, emerging talent. And then eventually I went into customer service, sales, tech support, making my way through more to technical sales, recruitment via like solutions architect type roles. And I really love just the diversification. It's such a different skill set working with salespeople and then technical salespeople, which is just a really cool intersection of where, you know, they've got some technical chops and background, but then they also are, you know, customer facing, having to sell products and nurture those relationships, right? And then eventually at, you know, Google, I started working on the fiber optic side with Google Fiber and then made my way into user experience. So UX design, UX research, UX writing and content development, which was a really new space for me. And they gave me my choice. They're like, do you want to work on software engineering? Do you want to work on user experience? I'm like, what's user experience? And they're like, it's like all things the user, right? And so like when people are using products, how are they experiencing them? What's that experience like? Is it seamless? Does it flow? And then just really understanding what their experience is like to make the products better and really optimize, right? And I was like, oh my gosh, that is so cool because I'm always that person that's like nerds out on surveys. So like whenever there are products that I use at the bottom link where it says like, would you like to give us feedback? I always had my hand of like, oh, I want to tell you all the things and give you my opinions. And so I was like, oh, this really resonates with me as a user myself, right? And they had such a really robust product portfolio. It was really fun to work on lots of different products at Google, you know, from Gmail to Chrome to YouTube, you know, all the different things, even Waze, you know, there's all kinds of different products looking for different things, but all with the aim of a really great user experience. So that one was very interesting because I got to really learn about what the portfolio design process was like, what people talk about when they talk about their work. It's not just about their resume and the interviews. They have to, you know, share and walk through their portfolio of work and show, you know, demonstrated visual examples of these things. So I really found a lot of passion around that and in the way that people talk about their work. And then really tying that back to interviewing, which is the thing that I have been prepping people for years and years, and just going over, you know, how they talk about their work accomplishments, the work that they're most proud of. And this really does set up for the pay discussions that, that happen later on in the process, right? So I think there's a definite through line of being able to help people understand where their skills, strengths, capabilities are, how they can kind of stack rank them, if you will, and then really showcase those pieces to tie it back to it, to business impact and how they're adding value to business and how they're talking about it. And that's just absolute fodder for when you get to the pay discussion, because really negotiating pay and having pay conversations starts from the moment you get on the phone with that recruiter or you're on the Zoom call or whatever that case is. And they start kind of early and often where you're really kind of setting the stage for them to understand how you're providing value and impact. 'Cause that's what they're listening for. You tend to be in your own head thinking about what do I need to say? What do they want to know about? What can I tell them? But what they're acutely listening for is the what's in it for them factor. Like, how is it that you're bringing that company a value add, right? And so just being able to go through some of these concepts one-on-one with people with coaching. And then I do this a lot too, where I'll do like master classes or go on podcasts and just share some of these tools and tips that I'm happy to do today.
I can't wait to go into more depth. It sounds like you have such a huge wealth of knowledge.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm happy to do it. Let's dive in. Okay. So before we dive into the tips, I'd love to hear from you, Kelly, on your thoughts. Like, how important do you think confidence is when it comes to salary negotiations, especially in the tech industry? And then if you have any personal anecdotes of anything you've encountered, any challenges that you've had in this area in your own career, I'd love to hear about it.
Confidence. I think that confidence is like important with regard to like my own career. I've had a set salary, so it's not been something that I've had to negotiate yet, but it's something that I feel quite anxious about and feel like it's quite awkward to bring it up. And you know, knowing how to navigate the conversation, but I know that as I'm progressing with my career, this is going to be a conversation that I'm going to have. So I'm really looking forward to some of the tips that you're going to be giving us, and I'll definitely be taking some notes. With regards to confidence and it playing a huge role in salary negotiation, what are some of the key ways an individual can build and work on projecting their confidence with regards to discussing pay?
That's such a great, juicy question, I call it. And thank you for sharing and being just brave enough to say that it's awkward and it gives people the ick sometimes just talking about money, talking about themselves and their qualifications. So that's actually a great segue to where we dive in first, which is a little bit of self-examination, understanding what your strengths and your abilities are, and really leaning into those. I can't emphasize enough that if you don't believe in your strengths and your capabilities and your skills and all those wonderful things that, you know, culminate into all of your experiences that you bring to the table to that employer, they will not believe it either. So you have to know and really own those things, even the ones that are like the pitfalls where things didn't go well, because there's always going to be learnings and lessons, right, that you bring along with you in your toolkit. So I would say just an intimate knowledge. And I tell people, literally write this down. I have like templates and forms and all kinds of cool stuff that they can do to do this exercise, which are like Let's just start with three things. What are three strengths that you really know about yourself and that you're like, oh yeah, that's my jam, that's my thing. It's communication, or it's partnership and collaboration, or my technical coding ability. Whatever that is for you, there's a lot of power in writing those things down, whether you're doing it digitally in a soft copy, or if you're really literally writing them down and really leaning into those strengths and just getting just a deep understanding. And then that's how you're going to build out like a lot of your best, you know, interview examples, and not even just interview examples, but knowing these strengths and being able to talk about them and tying them back to your work with specific examples is going to be great for performance reviews, compensation negotiation conversations. So it's not just a one and done. These are things that are going to translate through many phases and aspects of your career in the different phases that you go through. So I would say starting with your strengths, knowing your key strengths and abilities, being able to show evidence of success by examples of your work. So like a time that you directly did that thing, and that's your value proposition. That's your 60-second elevator pitch when you're talking to them during interviews. And then of course, when you you know, get to the negotiation table. And I love that you said, I haven't had to, you know, negotiate salary yet. I love that you said that. I love that you're recognizing it's like, hey, I haven't done this yet, but it's going to happen. And you want to be prepared. You want to get some tools ready. So yeah, I would say, you know, definitely knowing your skills and strengths. And then next would be having just a really clear objective about your conversations when it comes to salary. So know what you're asking for, right? So you don't want to just throw spaghetti at the wall and hope something sticks. This is definitely not the place to do that, right? So having a really clear objective, and I call it knowing your floor, your floor and your ceiling. So like knowing the range of the salary that you're comfortable with. And then as, you know, conversations go on, interviews, promotional opportunities, maybe you're having career progression conversations at your current job, understanding the scope of the role, understanding really what's needed and required is going to help you kind of zero in on exactly what it is that you want and the range that you're looking for. And there's a few different strategies to doing this is, you know, understanding like the specific outcome that you're looking for. So it's like, hey, am I looking for a pay increase? Am I wanting more scope and role? Am I looking for a promotion or a title change? Some people are really title driven. And then understanding what are the components of compensation. For some people, it's hourly rate, maybe because you're freelancing or it's project-based, right? Or maybe it's salary where it's base salary, then you have bonus, and then maybe you have equity via stock options or RSUs, those types of things. So there's kind of, it's kind of like a pizza pie, right? Where there's a lot of different elements that are coming into this total compensation plan and really understanding what it is your objective is or your desired outcome, and then really honing in on that range. We can get into more specifics about that later. I'll go into like really specific ways that you kind of structure the way that you're looking at this.
Definitely. I believe that some of the common fears that women have specifically, as well as just anybody that's trying to navigate these conversations, oftentimes we see it like shown in movies or in TV, or sometimes we know somebody who has risen their hand and tried to ask for a higher salary. And sometimes there are some common objectives that can be had, such as you're already receiving a good salary. Why do you need a pay increase? How can one, you know, effectively counter these objections and still advocate for a higher salary?
Yeah, this is such a great question too. I would say do your research. There's a lot of power in data and numbers. And most of the time, businesses and people who are protecting their budgets and their spend on headcount salaries, they're doing just exactly that, which is their job is to protect the company by offering competitive pay. And let's be really honest, not at the cheapest price, but the lowest cost to them to get the most output from you. And your job is to advocate for yourself, know exactly the skills and strengths that you bring to the table. You've got your evidence of success via your examples. You have direct tie into projects and examples that you can share where you've done this and you've made an impact, right? But there are definitely resources out there for you to be able just to get your due diligence out there, collect some data points so that you can come in and say, hey, I know what the market is paying for this particular role and I'm ready. So what I do is I can share some, you know, I can give you like salary.com is a really great resource. Hire.com has a salary calculator, which also takes into account where you're living, those types of things. SalaryTransparentStreet.com is another good one. And then I would say just be really cautious about like forums. So like you know, your Reddits or your Glassdoors. Those are great forums for discussion, but just remember to take it with a grain of salt. It's not gospel. It's not 100% accurate because people are just putting in their opinion. And sometimes when they're going to these forums, they're not always, you know, in the best state of mind or have had the best experience, right? So you may get something that might skew some of those data points. So I would say use good, credible resources and websites that are getting employer-fed data. So these are employers that are submitting actual numbers and data ranges or salary ranges to get a really good understanding of what the market pay practices are and what the landscape is, right? The other thing to consider too is when you're looking at salary and doing your research, you're going to be looking for like positions. So they may not have your exact job role or title because every company uses titles slightly differently and they're not always apples to apples. So try to find something that's the closest to, or at least has some of the core elements. And then also think about years of experience that you're plugging into these tools and then the location of the role. Because, you know, salaries in the US and salaries like in the UK could be really vastly different, right? And then even different parts of the country. If you're living in a major metro market like London, is going to be very different than it would be in another part of the country, right? So, and then there's, I think, two distinctions to call out here too, is there's cost of living and cost of labor. So a lot of times people go in with the thought of, oh, well, I need to get a salary adjustment or I should be getting paid more because of cost of living. It's really expensive to live here in the city. And so I should be compensated for this. But companies are thinking of it from the lens, or can be thinking it from the lens of cost of labor. What does it cost to hire somebody in this role, in this location? And those two things don't always line up. So there's a couple of considerations to think about. So I would say, you know, do your research, make sure you've got some data points to lean on. And that's where you're going to really start to hone in on your personal range, what's important to you, determined by maybe your current salary, and then the data points that are out there from other companies coming from other markets, industries for like roles. I hope that's helpful.
I think that's definitely helpful. I am taking notes and I'm pretty sure that others are too.
Great.
You've mentioned a lot of resources that can be utilized. I was wondering if you could share some examples from your experience or from other people's experience of how they've negotiated their salaries successful and how they integrated resources or some of the tips that you've mentioned. And what made the negotiation stand out?
Yeah, this is, man, so you have such great questions. I love the way that you design some of these questions. I feel like they're really meaty and things that people think about a lot. So I would say, I think just about every single client that I work with, and then even just on the DMs and LinkedIn that, you know, the conversations I have with folks, is especially women, and then women of color even more, have literally said to me, I have never negotiated my salary. I just don't know where to start. I don't know what to ask for. I don't know what to do. And it just makes me really nervous. Because here's the thing, the job market is tough right now. It's really competitive. There's a sea of talent. There's lots of options for employers right now, right? And so people feel oftentimes like you feel really lucky to get that interview. And then to get to the offer stage, you feel even luckier, right? You're on the home stretch. But I would say, don't do yourself the disservice of not, you know, really hitting it home in this very last mile. It's so important because you've already done all the work in your career. You've have all these accomplishments. You've got all these examples, right? And you're going to make it such a clear, easy decision for them because you know your why, you know why you're doing this, and you know why it's a great decision for them, right? You have direct tie back to examples. So in these compensation conversations, you can say, I know I'm a great fit for this role because, and you fill in the blank with at least 2 to 3 examples, but you're going to have already done your questions through your interview loops of asking them, like, what are your pain points? What are you challenged with? And you're filling that gap. You're filling that need for them. So you're making it just a really easy decision from a really clear yes, because you're ready with those examples, really pointed examples, right? So I would say just, you know, have the receipts ready to show them, right? And then the next thing is building that confidence and that muscle of just talking about money. And this is where it can be really taboo for a lot of people, a lot of cultures, a lot of women. And it all starts with the way that you were kind of raised in your family, in some of those social constructs that you came to the table with, right? We all have our like baggage of the way we talked about money growing up, where it's like, was it scarcity? Where it's like, you talked about how much money you didn't have, or was it like maybe coming from abundance, or maybe it's plentiful, where it's like, yeah, this is great. We should totally do this. And like, you know, those money conversations are all things that kind of frame up the way that you're looking at money. So some of that you might have to just unpack within yourself, and then just start to flex the muscle of talking and normalizing these conversations around money. So I would say definitely start there. But then when you start to practice these conversations specifically about salary and pay, which oftentimes can be kind of, you know, scary or awkward, you're just not used to talking about it. I would say get a trusted friend, colleague, mentor. I would say colleagues and mentors are really important, especially the mentorship side, to talk about these pay conversations and just saying like, hey, what are you seeing in your industry? What are you seeing at your company? What's going on there? Here's the range that they've kind of shared with me. Does that sound right to you? And then some of that due diligence and research I was talking about on websites also happens in your network too, with the trusted peers, colleagues, and mentors, and having those conversations. Here's what I'm thinking about asking. What is it? What does that sound? Does that sound about right to you? What are you thinking about this strategy, right? And just even honing the skills of just practicing these conversations. And you're already doing it just by asking them, just by putting the conversation out there, right? And just being able to, like, again, just practice and flex that muscle. And then also to preparing for multiple pay conversations. Like, the conversation can go one way where you're going to have your ask, your very clear why for them and like what's in it for them. And you're going to give them clear examples, but it doesn't mean you're going to get like, that sounds great. You sound amazing. Let's just give you what you want. You know, because like I said, their job is to protect assets, to protect their money and their budgets, right? So if it goes that way, have a couple of different plans. With each one of my clients, I walk through like a plan A, here's what we ask. And if it goes well, right? And then here's plan B, if it starts to go a little sideways. And they're like, okay, because the plan A is, okay, that sounds good. Let me see if I can get it approved. And that's their like soft, yes, I want to work with you, right? And that's like the best case scenario. Then there's your plan B where they're like, no, that's the top of the range. That's not something that we're really prepared to pay for this role. And you're kind of getting a soft no, right? Where it's like, no, that's probably not going to work. But you still have some leverage. And this is a delicate dance of who's, you know, court that the ball is in, right? So it's important to, like, you know, ask those questions, understand what the ranges are, understand what you're ready to flex on, right? And then have your different plans. So if it doesn't go well, start to think about some of the intangibles and the non-cash things, right? Because everybody's got different motivators and things that are important to them. So for example, if you get kind of that softer no, where they're like, nope, this is probably going to be our best, you know, most competitive offer. This is what we have to offer you. Start to and think about, even in the job search phase and even in the interview phase, what are some of the other pieces that are still important to you? Maybe it's work location. Maybe it's hybrid versus remote. Maybe it's work hours. And then location is another important one too. Is like, do I have to be in office? Because I noticed you have another office over here and that's closer to my family demands, right? So sometimes it's hours, it could be location. It could be the team that you're working with. It could be your timeline where it's like, okay, but here's my timeline. And this is what I need from you is I need to start in 30 days because I need to wrap up my current role and then kind of reset and get ready, right? Or maybe you've got some planned vacation, something like that. So find the different things that are going to resonate for you. Like I said, hours, location, timing, projects, you know, any of those things that you can be flexible on. And then think about the other components of the pay too, which could be like benefits. It could be time off and flexibility. Asking those questions, because if those things are important to you, then maybe taking a little bit lower compensation, but maybe you have higher bonus or more flexible hours or better location, or maybe work style. Like I said, maybe you really need something that's hybrid where you don't have to be in the office 5 days a week. You know, those are the other things that can be really, really important factors as you're looking at that total compensation, the total plan, and then the offer that you're really kind of negotiating, is some of those non-pay factors as well.
I love your answer and just how in depth you went into the answer. I think you've made some great points that when you're negotiating, it's not only just about the salary, you can also negotiate other aspects. And mm-hmm. I know with a job interview that I went to, initially they said that you have to be in the office, but after they interviewed with me, they were actually like, we are actually open to having it hybrid. And they even offered me a higher salary than they were advertising because they recognized the skill set that I had and that I was going to also be scouted by other people. So definitely have confidence in your ability
Yes.
and understand that you can negotiate.
Yeah, I love that for you. And congratulations on that. And I love that you asked about, like, you know, because sometimes they're going to give you kind of the most conservative everything up front, right? But then you can start to see as you have these conversations with the recruiter or with the hiring manager where they can loosen up. And sometimes it's just a no-go. Like, I had a client just a couple of weeks ago, and she was interviewing with Meta. And she said, you know, hey, I love the team. I like the work. She had her value proposition down. I mean, it's an interesting story with this particular example is she said, I've never negotiated salary. I just need to take the job. Like, I got laid off. It's been 6, 8 months now. It's been quite some time. And she's just ready to work. Her parents, her family, cousins, other people that got laid off on her team were like, just take the job. And I'm like, hold on. Let's put the brakes on here. And, you know, when she was talking with them, I was saying, you know, think about what it is that you need and what works best for you. And they told her straight out, she got the hard no. They're like, this is in office. We need you in the office 5 days a week. So if that's not going to be, you know, conducive for you, we need to know that up front. And then they also play a little bit of like interesting, I don't want to say it's hardball, but it's like positioning. Like, well, we have three other finalists as well. And that's their way of telling you, like, we're going to get somebody else. It's like, don't let that deter you. Don't let that scare you. Own known your strengths. You still have a lot to offer. And she's like, actually, I'm actually fine with going in office. I love community. I love working with teams. But what's more important to me is, and for her, it was stock units negotiating. She's not as much on the base salary, but I'm looking long-term and like towards my investments, right? So just, again, have those conversations about what's important to you. Maybe just start listing them out as like hours, location, you know, et cetera, different parts of the offer where you can find some leverage and pull some of those levers to have those conversations. Just put it out there. They'll let you know.
Definitely. And I was wondering, what are some of the biggest mistakes or common mistakes that you see people making during salary negotiations, and how can they avoid them?
Yeah, that's a good question too. Okay, biggest pitfalls that I see are not knowing your floor and your ceiling. So not knowing your pay range and just kind of winging it. It's just not a place where you want to wing it when it comes to your offer. And here's why. Like your initial job offer really sets the stage and the foundation for kind of your career and pay trajectory, right? Because what you go in at is now what you're going to be building on for incremental pay increases, salary increases, right? So it's really important for you to know that range. So people that I would say just don't have a range and they're just not understanding like where they can be flexible. The second one is not swinging for the fences and asking for your lowest end of the range. Please, please, please don't do this. Please stop and just ask yourself, hey, think about it. And I'm going to ask you ask the audience a spicy question. Tell me about a time when you accepted a job offer where you knew you should have and could have asked for more. That feeling of regret is the worst. I have done it. I can't even tell you how many times. I didn't have this right until way later in my career where I felt strong enough to ask and just put it out there. But I'm telling you, once you put that lower number out there, and believe me, their job is to pressure you and ask you for that number because they want you to show your cards before they do, right? Is asking for the lower number. I'm telling you, swing for the fences, ask for your higher range. And remember, you've done your due diligence. You've already done the research. You've got your data points. You feel good about this range. And remember, this is your ask, your big ask. They may take it. They may not. They may, you know, oblige you. They may not. But you'll feel so much better knowing that you at least swung for the fences, you put it out there, you asked for the higher range, and now you can maybe walk it back a little bit, or maybe it's going to be some of those other levers that you're going to be, you know, flexing on, right? But once you put the lowest number out there, now it's out, the cat's out of the bag. They know what that low number is, and it's going to be really hard to go the other direction asking for more when you've already told them what you would take. And that's that lower range. I would say those are probably the two most common mistakes I would say people make. And it's just because you're nervous and you're scared, right? But we're going to get you all set up for success that you've got some tools, you know your why, you're going to make it abundantly clear for them, make it an easy yes. You're going to know where you can flex, and then you'll feel more prepared in those conversations as you practice and practice with a trusted mentor or coach.
Right. Now you can ask me the question that I put on the the second green one.
Okay, so you've asked me lots of really great questions, Kelly. Now I have one for you. So as the host of Women in STEM, and I'm a big fan, I just was listening to the podcast just yesterday, you've spoken with many inspiring women. What role do you believe financial empowerment plays in helping women succeed in STEM fields or STEM careers? And like, how can we encourage more women to confidently negotiate their worth?
That is a great question. It's something that I believe is actually pivotal to the success of women in STEM. Oftentimes, people don't take into consideration the longevity of our careers as women, and the fact that women oftentimes will take pauses during their career having children. And I recently was reading about the stats with regards to pensions here in the UK, and I think in America it's referred to as retirement or 401k, and women's pensions are a lot less than men, even when they've been working the same amount as men. And this can often be because they've taken time off work, and the labor of a woman in the household is not being then contributed into a 401k. Therefore, I think that it's very important that when we are working, that we are making the most out of our salaries and our salary negotiation. I believe, you know, from some of the points that you previously made about negotiation, this can even go further with, you know, having flexible work days so that a woman can go on and make sure that she's available to go and pick up her children from school. These are things that cost us a lot of money and need to be taken into consideration. With regards to how we can, you know, encourage more women to be confident with negotiating their worth, I recently, a couple of months ago, went to an investment event for women, and they were like openly talking about women investing in stocks. And it felt so empowering and so nice to be in an environment where this was being celebrated and wasn't taboo. So I think there needs to be more events and more spaces where we can openly talk about salary expectation, salary negotiation, and raise that awareness.
Absolutely. You know what's interesting is when we talk about this topic, when you are advocating for yourself in pay conversations, whether it's a pay raise for a job you're already in, or maybe it's a new role and you're ready for that next adventure and you're looking at your salary, you just you advocating for yourself, just you flexing the muscle of asking is self-advocacy, right? But then when you get it and you land it, and 100% of my clients who have asked for a pay raise have gotten it in negotiations, because I'm there. I'm like, I'm their fan. I'm in their court coaching and helping them with these offers, right? But when you do that, you're closing the pay gap. You are closing the pay gap for women, and you're doing it. Like when you do that, you're closing it and closing it and closing it to make sure that you are getting a salary that is worthy of your accomplishments. But I am with you on the investment piece. I read a book years and years ago from Susie Orman. I don't even remember what it was called. It's a book by Susie Orman. And one of her first principles that stuck with me forever and ever to this day is pay yourself first. So she says, even when you're making crap money, you're not even making that much money, you put away your $5 or your $10 that you're not spending at the local cafe or the local Starbucks, and you put it away and invest for yourself. And I'm telling you, stack with compounding interest, and it does add up. It does. It's just, even if it's just a few bucks, pay yourself first before you start paying your bills, and you start investing that money with compounded interest, and you're going to see over time what a huge difference it makes.
How can women in particular overcome social barriers and confidently negotiate for what they deserve in a very heavily male-dominated industry like tech?
Yeah, this is such a topic near my heart, which is, you know, and I mentioned earlier that like when you're starting to advocate for your pay, you're starting to close the gender gap when it comes to pay practices, right? But it's about normalizing these conversations around money. So let's just start there. Normalizing the conversation around money, join some groups. Maybe you're in a cohort, maybe even LinkedIn groups, right? There's a lot of really great resources out there, and you're already doing it just by listening to this podcast. You're elevating your game. You're getting more awareness around it, right? But when it comes to societal barriers, just again, practicing having that conversation, being able to talk about money and then pivoting it to pay and how this directly impacts you, and thinking about all the accomplishments that you've honed and all these experiences that you've honed over the years during your work and all the things that you've done. You've worked really hard for that, right? And now it's time to get paid. So I'm telling you time and time again as a recruiter, and I've done this many times, I'm telling you right now, women listening, men have no problem asking for money. It's like zero hesitancy, and it's like it's almost dumbfounding. We're like, wow. Like, I've even talked to people, like, just to reach out to them about a job opportunity. They haven't even heard anything about it. And they're like, what does it pay? If I called a woman and said, hey, I've got this role that I think you might want to hear about, that's not the first question out of their mouth. I'm telling you, it's not. It's never has been for me, at least in my experience. No, they're like, oh, well, tell me about it. And they're already in their head about, am I qualified? Am I going to be good enough for this? Do I have the skills and qualification? They're already in their head about, do I count myself out for this role? But the guys, they have no problem. Like, oh yeah, that's the one for me. How much does it pay? And they're really quick about asking for that. Just look at the differences, right? So just, you know, bucking any of the thoughts of self-doubt, and this is just pure imposter syndrome. We've all been there, right? Of like, am I qualified for the role? Please don't count yourself out too early, right? So even just applying for those roles, knowing and believing in your skills and abilities, because I think there's data out there that shows like women are less likely to even apply for a role if they don't think they're 100% qualified. And I'm here to tell you right now, no one is 100% qualified. I've written many JDs and job descriptions over the years, many, many, many hundreds of them, right? And this is the employer's pie in the sky. If we can make the perfect human to do this role, they would check all these boxes. Very rarely, I don't even know that I've ever hired anyone that's like, wow, they ticked every single box. It just doesn't happen, right? It's like they're nice to have, again, pie in the sky, right? So even if you're 60%, 70% qualified in some of these opportunities, please don't count yourself out. Count yourself in, get your foot in the door, start applying. It's okay if you get rejected. It's going to happen, right? Build resilience by building that confidence and knowing what your skills and abilities and what you have to offer. But don't count yourself out before you've already even applied for that job. So I think it starts there, then the pay conversations, and then also getting the support of mentorship, coaches, anybody that can be an ally for you. And then I'll even push you to try to, I advise my clients, get at least three mentors, one in your organization, one out of your organization, and maybe even one in a different industry. All of this is going to give you diversity of perspective. You're going to get really good like insight into like what's happening. You're going to get a pulse of what's happening maybe in your sector or in your particular role. Because like say you're a software engineering is pretty, you know, consistent in skills, right? But they could be having different ebbs and flows in different parts of industries. So you have to think about different sectors, right? But all of this is going to give you really good insight. And then some coaching too. Like if they can give you some advice. You can have, you know, good conversations with them and just ask them like, you know, what advice would you give me? What are you reading? How can I develop this skill? There's all kinds of things that you could be talking about, right? But getting your tribe together is so important. It is going to help you build confidence and really close that gap when you go to advocate for yourself for new roles, promotions, even performance reviews. Even your mentor can help you with your performance. Hey, take a look at this and give me some feedback. And then being really open and really curious and listening to their feedback and being able to take those little nuggets with you. And you're just building up that support system. Hopefully that answered that question.
Yeah, definitely. With regards to like adding on to what you've said, one of the things that I have done and that I learned about from somebody else is having a brag folder. So a brag folder is a folder that you have like on your computer, wherever suits you. And whenever you, you know, hit a target, whenever you get good feedback from your manager or from anybody else at your workplace, you put this all into this folder. And when it comes to a time when you're having to review a salary or you're, you know, going to have that end of year meeting, you have something to reference to. So you don't just have to pluck out things out of thin air. And so that would be something that I would recommend.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you so much. That's something that I didn't name specifically, but when I was talking about having those receipts ready, right, and showing mm-hmm. them evidence of success, this is directly tied to having a brag book. I call it your brag book, your amazing book of accomplishments. Every one of my clients gets a template with their amazing book of accomplishments. These are things that you own and you've done. These are who made you who you are in your career today, right? For good or for bad. So they're not always going to be wins, right? Because you'll be ready for those spicy questions of when something didn't go your way and what you learned. But having that brag book of accomplishments is so important. If I could just give one more add-on to what you said, because it's such a great suggestion, is even if you think, I just don't have time, Carrie, I'm working, I'm doing my job, and then I have to wear all the hats when I get home, right? And I just don't have time to do this. Please, please, please make the time for yourself. Put it on your calendar to hold yourself accountable. Go over it with your mentor, even, or your coach, right? Or even a colleague. Like, you can have an accountability partner. You can say, hey, we're going to meet once a quarter and we're just going to sit and write and add things to our brag book. But add it on your calendar monthly if you can, on maybe a low lift day. So maybe Fridays are your lower lift day, or whatever day you have less meetings, less responsibility, even if it's just 30 minutes. You can go back in your calendar, go through your projects, your tasks, anything that is part of the scope of your role, and just start adding onto those projects, adding onto some of these accomplishments and things that you've worked on. And even other things that didn't go so well, what did you learn? What did you take from that, right? And if once a month seems too frequent for you, or if you just got a super tight calendar, at least once a quarter, go back. Because if you wait to do it just, you know, every 6 months, you're probably going to have too many things in there that are going to get lost, or you're going to just plain old forget. Right. But I would say monthly is really, really great. And even a quarterly cadence of just having just this reminder on your calendar where you've carved out this time for yourself to just go add it in. Even if it's messy, you can go out and build out those examples later. But if you can just say, oh, that one thing at that thing that I did, and then we did this, you know, just start putting stuff in there and then you can start to build it out. It's going to be really helpful for you with performance reviews and pay conversations. Yeah. Great, great tip.
Yeah, that's definitely a great tip. And you mentioned how important mentors are. And I know that I have women in various stages of their career and some who are mentors. What advice would you give them to help individuals reach their peak state in their career, and how they could possibly go about offering, you know, salary negotiation advice or any tips with regards to that? Because I know that can be a sensitive topic sometimes.
Yeah. Okay. So I would say stay really open and stay really curious about yourself. So everything that we've talked about today really does start with you and just really knowing yourself, knowing what you want, having a really clear goal in mind. So you have a North Star, right, that you're working towards, and then starting to think about how is it that I can start to make space for myself? Is there anything that I can clear out that's just not serving me, that isn't in alignment with my goals and like what it is that I'm working towards, and really just protecting your energy that way by letting some of those things go so that you can make room to focus on what it is that you do want. And then next, I would say to really reach your peak state is to take action on those things. And that's probably one of the hardest pieces that people have with, which is the taking action, right? And this is oftentimes while they go to a coach or they go to our mentors, like, hey, I know I need to do this, I just haven't done it. And they just need that accountability to take action. So taking action, right? You don't have to do it right. You just have to give it a go. You just have to at least try just a little bit, because your biggest competition is you. So like when you're scrolling on your socials, you're looking at LinkedIn, you see all these people getting promoted and they're doing all these great things, and you're feeling a little impostery, like, oh, I should already be doing that, or I should be doing that, or like they already have this, I should have that. Your biggest competition is you. As long as you're just a little bit better than you were yesterday, because you've got your goals identified, you've got your tribe, you're going to take action and stay accountable with somebody that you trust, right? Like a coach or a mentor. That's where you get your peak state, right? Is being able to take action, because you're going to feel so good when you look back 6 months from now and you're like, oh yeah, I did do those things, right? And I did move the needle just a little bit further, more and more and more, right? So being able to just, like I said, it doesn't have to be right. It doesn't have to be perfect. Just give it a go.
Those are some great tips and advice. I was wondering, with regards to financial growth and throughout one's career, this is something that's going to be reoccurring in your career. And so beyond the initial negotiation, how best can somebody ensure that they're always pushing forward with regards to their pay increase and keeping track of it?
Yeah, that's great. I think adding a section to your brag book is going to be important there, right? Which is like, maybe, and then maybe you bucket it out by which employer, right? Like, what was your role? How long were you there for? And what was your starting pay? And then what was your ending pay? So as you're updating this document periodically, you're adding in, you know, probably annually if you're getting new pay increases, and then just reassess. So like every year I do, well, not every year, this is my second one, but I'll do like a master class, which is called Year End Reflections and then Planning Ahead. And these are some of the things we talk about. So like when November, December rolls around, you can look back. What did I do this year? What did I accomplish? What are some of the big rocks that I moved this year in my job, right? And then looking at your pay too, like how did your pay change or not change? Because a lot of companies right now, budgets are tight, and people tell me, I haven't gotten a pay raise in 5 years, 3 years, but they're not handing out raises or bonuses this year. You know, so being able to take a look at it and really deciding for yourself, is this where I want to stay? I'm going to stick it out because I love my team or I love the role, or you know what? I'm really just not, my strengths are not being utilized as much as I could. I think I could be making more. I want to start looking and start doing my research of looking at maybe other opportunities and really just, you know, just carving out some time to take a look and kind of assess that. So I would say, even if you're doing that annually, just kind of tracking and you're putting your brag book of accomplishments, is a really great way to just kind of take stock. And also too, when you're having those conversations with your mentors, or even coaches, ask them just like, hey, what do you see going on in the industry? This is what I'm noticing here at my company, because it could be, economic type things. It could, you know, there's a lot of ripple effects right now, like especially here in the US, we've got like an election year, it's all spicy. and so like, it can really change the way things swing with the economy, and that ripples effects out into businesses, right? And it affects how they're doing hiring and raises, all those types of things. So I think it's just such a good tip that you call out of just being able to track that and then kind of seeing like, hey, what's next for me? Maybe what do I want in the next 1 year, 3 year, 5 year? Because if it's monetary and you're like, hey, I know that I want to be at least 10 or 15% a bump above what I'm making now, then maybe at least that's what your goal is. And you start to make it kind of time bound, and then you keep checking in with yourself as you're moving through these milestones and these different roles.
Those are some great tips and advice. You've mentioned like a masterclass and so many other great resources. How best can listeners connect with you? And do you have any upcoming events, and where can people find you?
Oh, that's a great question. I can be found on LinkedIn. So I'm LinkedIn, Carrie M. Peralta. So I'm sure we'll link that in the show notes there. And then my website is peakstatecoaching.com. I will chat with everybody. You can tell I'm probably really extroverted. I love, love, love talking to people. You can always grab some time with me on a discovery call where you just want to like, hey, Carrie, I just want to like bounce a few ideas off of you. And I work with people globally too. So, if you ever just want to like spend 30, 45 minutes, just have a chat. And if there's anything that I can do to support you, be an ally, be a champion, be a cheerleader for you, I am up for it. I love, love, love what I do. I'm super passionate about it. And it absolutely fills my cup to make new connections.
Wow. Thank you so much for spending time with us and spreading your knowledge. Thank you for coming on the Women in STEM podcast.
Thank you so much. It's been an honor and a privilege. Thank you so much for sharing time with me.
Listeners, if you've enjoyed this episode, please make sure to subscribe to this podcast on your favorite streaming platform, leave a review and rating to help us reach more listeners, and follow our social medias, the latest updates and behind the scene content. Join us next week for another exciting episode. And until then, keep exploring the world of STEM and empowering women in STEM.